Back together again, you and I wrapping up a busy week on Friday, July 26th, 2024, right here on Connecticut Today, where I began the show pointing out the political language now coming out of Washington regarding the ongoing Israel-Hamas war in Gaza. Fairfield GOP State Senator Tony Wong dropped by to talk about a recent spike in auto theft in Connecticut. Former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso also stopped by with his weekly wrap-up, including the latest details on a couple of high-profile local state Senate Democratic primaries. So I'm doing my show prep, and I come across an article that I honestly look at, and I don't know whether to laugh, honestly, because it's so patently ridiculous, from somebody who should know better, or to cry, because, again, it's so patently ridiculous from somebody who should know better. And we're talking about Vice President Kamala Harris, who is now ostensibly the de facto Democratic White House candidate. Now, having said that, I'm looking at these articles here, and this leads to a bigger point. It leads to a much bigger point, and I'm interested to hear, especially from you progressive voters, from you folks who will probably, if you've made up your mind, not vote for Donald Trump, because I think I know what the answer is to this, but I have to ask it, even in a rhetorical sense here. And it's not a difficult question, but the answer may be difficult as much. Why is it that now Republicans have no, this is pretty cut and dry for Republicans and even some folks who are conservative but don't want to, you know, align themselves with the Republican Party. I sat here and I looked at five or six different stories. Why is it that it is so difficult for progressives and Democrats, especially those in high-profile areas, to, when they talk about the Israel-Hamas war, to actually put some of the blame on Hamas? Why is it always, and we'll get to this yesterday, this story from yesterday, why is it that the fingers always wag among the progressives, among the MSNBC crowd, the New York Times crowd, the inside the Beltway, D.C., Foggy Bottom State Department crowd? Why are the fingers always wagging at Israel? And if you're a Jewish voter out there, you ever notice that? Do you ever notice how most Democrats, not all of them, but most Democrats rarely say anything pointed directly at Hamas? Because, again, Bibi Netanyahu came, he gave that speech to Congress, 30 Democrats didn't go, whatever, they're pandering, but I get it. I mean, even some Democrats who said, listen, I don't agree with the guy, what he's doing, but it's a show of respect, which I do respect. Some of that was said among the, like Richard Blumenthal said and Jim Himes said in the Connecticut delegation. But there's always this, well, you know, yeah, Hamas is bad, but Israel has to pick up the slack here. What am I talking about? Let me give you an example here. And yesterday, I guess Kamala Harris met with Benjamin Netanyahu, and there's nothing wrong with that meeting, right? You have a head of state in Israel, and I know people think that Bibi is very, everybody says to me, well, you know, he's awfully, you know, a lot of people don't like him in Israel. Yeah, but you know what? He's the coalition government head. So he's still the boss there. So Kamala Harris says yesterday, quote, it is time for this war to end. Quote again, I will not be silent on Palestinian suffering. Really, General Harris? Madam Vice President, does the very stylish business suit you're wearing, do I see two or three or four stars on your shoulder pads? Are you wearing any medals across one of the breasts of the suit there? Kamala Harris said, quote, Israel has a right to defend itself, and how it does so matters. Oh, don't you love this? How it does so matters. And Bibi Netanyahu had to sit there and get lectured on this. Now, she continues, and this is just not her. This is the far left of the Democratic Party here. Quote, It's time for this war to end, and in a way where Israel is secure, all the hostages are released, the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can exercise their right to freedom, dignity, and self-determination. Wow! That sounds like she just solved a Wheel of Fortune puzzle. Harris has been under pressure to further define her position on the Israeli war with Hamas in Gaza, now in its 10th month, since she lost her case, since she since she launched her campaign last Sunday. Well, of course she is, because now the lefties in her party, who, listen, I understand that they don't want war. War is not a good thing. But again, and we'll get to some more comments here. Understand what she said yesterday, and more importantly, what she didn't say, and more importantly, what a big chunk of the Democratic Party in this country will never say. They will go out of their way, and they will do the two-step and the soft shoe and the shuffle and whatever they can not to point fingers at Hamas. It's always Netanyahu's fault. It's all, and look, he hasn't been perfect, I get it. It's always his fault. It's always the fault of the international community. But nobody, I shouldn't say no one, but honestly, ask yourself, when was the last time you saw anybody on the Democratic or progressive side in D.C. or even here in Connecticut say Hamas has to cut it out? Well, you know, Israel, they got to get the hostages out. Really? You know how getting the hostages out may happen? By the people holding them, releasing them. Did you forget about that? Oh, yeah. She said, quote, there has been hopeful movement and the talks to secure an agreement on this deal. And I just told Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, it's time to get this deal done. Really, Madam Vice President, or maybe Madam President, did you say that to Hamas? Or if you didn't, what are you so afraid of? Well, we know what she's afraid of, the lefties in her party. Don't criticize Hamas. They're just displaced people. No, they keep civilians among them. They hide among civilians to, in some warped sense, hope that civilian casualties rise. Now, the White House later said, now, again, this is a little cleanup on aisle three here. This is what I mean. Read these stories with a critical eye. Little cleanup on aisle three here. Bad spill. Let's get the 18-year-old kid with the mop there and the little wet floor sign. The White House later said that Harris and Netanyahu also discussed the administration's work to ensure Israel can defend itself from threats from Iran and Iranian-backed terror groups, including Hamas, Lebanese Hezbollah, and the Houthis. But it's funny, the White House later said that she didn't. You see where I'm going at here? So... My Jewish friends out there who may base their vote on how they see this issue handled, just don't take this stuff for granted. Read what happens. Read what a candidate says, and then perhaps what a campaign or a White House says after that. Okay, now, here's the closest Kamala Harris came to actually putting a thumb in the eye of Hamas. But understand, now, again, this is the closest, most high-profile Democrats. Most, not all. There are some Democrats who are of the old ilk of the party. Understand, this is the closest they will come to actually telling Hamas to release the hostages. And this is your fault for attacking Israel. Now, listen to the verbal twister here. Harris said in a statement on the protests Thursday, remember there were protests in D.C. when Bibi was speaking, and that's fine, people can protest. She says this, quote, I condemn any individuals associated with the brutal terrorist organization Hamas, which has vowed to annihilate the state of Israel and kill Jews. All right. I condemn any individuals associating with the brutal terrorist organization Hamas, which has vowed to annihilate the state of Israel and kill Jews. She didn't condemn Hamas. She didn't say, I condemn Hamas and everything they've done since the start of this war and their actions to instigate it. She didn't say that. Oh, Paul, that, come on. Your hair's splitting. Well, that's how they write. There's a reason things are written this way. I condemn any individuals associating with Hamas, which, of course, has vowed to annihilate the state of Israel and kill Jews. And then she said, pro-Hamas graffiti and rhetoric is abhorrent, and we must not tolerate it in our nation. Again, she's condemning the graffiti and the rhetoric, right? And the individuals associating themselves with Hamas, still no direct condemnation of Hamas, right? But let's go to the next couple of sentences here. Let us, and here it is, the usual progressive pablum when they the word salad, when they know they have to condemn actions against Israel, but they do it going, do I have to say this? Here it is, quote, let us condemn all terrorism and violence. Let us do what we can to prevent the suffering of innocent civilians, and let us condemn anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and hate of any kind, and let us work to unite our country. Still, no condemnation of Hamas that I can see. See what I mean here? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. And they are, the progressives loved, when they know that they've got to condemn some sort of anti-Semitism from Hezbollah, from Iran, from Hamas, from PFLP, or any of those people in the Middle East, they always throw in, let's condemn anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and all hate. And let's all think kumbaya. Folks, this is, come on, this is, if you are a person of the Jewish faith, or you somehow align your vote in November with policy toward Israel, get ready. Listen, Joe Biden, listen, Biden said what he had to, but he did it, kicking and screaming. I mean, you can tell since the vice president catapulted to the top of the ticket here. As it said, this said in the story, and the story's on CNBC. It's not on Fox. It's on, not on some right-wing website. They said, well, she's been under pressure to talk tough on Israel. And meantime, Israel is pretty much the only state in the Middle East where, geez, I don't know, you can be gay and not worry. You can be a woman and not be subjugated. But I guess this is where she is pandering now. Republican State Senate member Tony Wong Fairfield joins us. Tony, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. Great to talk to you.
These numbers, though, Tony, not good here. You probably saw this. Connecticut auto thefts increasing by 33% last year. That's a lot. That's not 2 or 3%. That's 33%, this story from the Fox 61 website. But it's all over the place. And, Tony, I know there are efforts every session in the General Assembly with you guys and gals up there to try and counteract this. What, in your mind, what do you think when you see these numbers? And they're even, this is not just, Tony, an urban problem. We see these in suburbs like many of the towns that you represent and you do business in. So what is up here? And is there anything more that needs to be done in Hartford at the Capitol to try and put to stem the tide on this?
Well, I think the first thing we have to acknowledge is that a real problem exists. We do have some colleagues who had said there is not a crime problem in the state of Connecticut. I beg to differ. If you talk to people up and down Main Street, it is a real concern in regards to not only car theft, but that street takeovers and just a general lax and arrogance against law and order. But that being said, focusing on cars and car thefts, that data point is not startling to me. It is, unfortunately, a reality for policymakers like myself who talk to people. So one of the points that I think we need to address is to understand the source of this, right? And I think one of them has to be addressing the issue of juvenile crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I am a little bit atypical because these kind of factors of juvenile crime is well established, but we need to get to the root of the problem. I think the part of the first solution has to be we need to support our law enforcement. Some of the regulations that we passed in a number of years during the COVID era really kind of hampered law enforcement to be able to do their job. And I hope that we acknowledge, one, that there is a crime problem, particularly in car thefts and many other aspects of disrespect of law and order. But I think the second part, particularly on juvenile crime, is this. We're on to the summer months, and school is out, and there's a lot of downtime for many of our young kids. And many of the programs like Carnal Sheehan in the area, McGivney, the Boys and Girls Club of Wakeman, they provide incredible opportunities for mentorship and support and sporting and recreational activities for these kids to keep them occupied in the summer. The problem is there's not enough of these programs. So when a young adult is bored and in a summer months of not having things occupy their time, they're going to do things that are risk-taking. And one of them has been the habitual of going on joyrides.
Mm-hmm.
So the car theft is alluring, but I think in addition to law and order, we really need to get to the root and make sure that these young people have mentorship, have engagement, and have opportunity to understand respecting law and order and not going for a moment of a joyride could impact the rest of their lives.
Yeah, and Tony, I have talked with active law enforcement on this show, just officers, men and women who call me up and tell me what they have to deal with, and retired law enforcement. And one thing that they have always, driven home with me, no matter how they feel politically or something, is kind of what you said. And the kind of thing where breaking into an auto or trying to steal one on that joyride is almost a rite of passage now. It's going to say if you're going to join the tribe or join the group, you know, you have to do this. And to that end, Tony, I've had law enforcement officers tell me because of the way these juveniles can be released, for example, they're often not held for any length of time to where they can maybe be held for a day or two. And I've always advocated, and I guess this doesn't happen, that before you release them to mom and dad or grandma and grandpa, you take them somewhere, you say, okay, what's going on here? What's up with you? You're not going to go home for a couple of days. It's Tuesday. You'll go home Thursday. You know, tell me about what's going on in your life. Why did you do this? I think we need more of that.
Well, absolutely. I think that the key is diversionary programs, giving these young adults an opportunity to understand the implications of these decisions, a few moments. And we're all capable of that in our youthful, rebellious years.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, the idea of having diversions, mentorship, I can't emphasize enough about mentorship. To be able to have role models and individuals to be able to offer insight, support, and guidance for these young people. It can't say enough about it. And also, for those young people that have made mistakes, and we need to have a second chance diversionary mm-hmm. so that these young people do not lead a career of crime, that they can be productive. I have seen remarkable stories of young people with proper support, mentorship, educational access, career access, to be able to turn their lives toward a positive direction. But nevertheless, you want to get to the core, and you have to admit in the General Assembly that there is a crime problem. Because not only does these crimes attack cars, property,
mm-hmm.
and the threatening of street safety, it also creates an unsettling sense of quality of life.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, as I've kind of gone visiting houses many ways, I have seen a dramatic increase in the last 4 to 5 years of rings on front doors.
Mm-hmm.
you know, the kind of monitor systems that I've never seen before. It really is, unfortunately, the general public acknowledgement that they need to take initiatives to protect themselves against the potential of crime against themselves, their families, and their personal properties. But most important of all, I think it needs to be in concert for all of us to row in the same direction to acknowledge that crime does exist, and we need to empower our law enforcement to do the right thing, balance with respect to social equity and race dynamics. But we need to be able to turn the tide, because right now we're going in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, some of our colleagues have put their head in the sand and said there is no crime problem, pointing to data points. Well, this is a data point that points out loud and clear.
Exactly.
And the public have said, I can't tell you how many people, Paul, like you said, with your friends, that have had their cars broken into. So when cars are broken into, it's not just the personal effects that are taken.
Mm-hmm.
It is a sense of safety that's been violated.
Absolutely. Tony, thank you. Republican State Senator Tony Wong. Tony, thanks. Have a happy weekend, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Paul. Pleasure.
All right. Take care, Tony. Thanks. Here's a guy who never says, do you know who I am? Chris Caruso.
Hey, Paul. Happy Friday.
How are you? Chris, have you ever pulled the do you know who I am card or not?
Never. Never.
No.
And you know what's funny, Paul? When I was in the legislature, I remember we had an orientation class, and the Speaker of the House spoke, and she said, never use your position if you're pulled over by a police officer.
Yeah.
Because it only goes downhill from then.
It's
really
not going to get any better, right?
No.
And then you don't want to see in the Post the next day, Bridgeport State Representative attempts to dodge speeding ticket, right? No.
It was sage advice, and I've always honored that, just like you. You know, if I get pulled over, and I have, I'm just very polite. I put my hands on the steering
wheel. That's it, yep.
And just very polite. And then if the officer asks me for, my license, mm-hmm. I give that to him. I don't go back and forth with him. It's, in the long run, it's not worth it. It really isn't. And to use your position just creates more issues down the road. It really does.
Yeah, there was a buddy of mine, Chris, driving home from a newspaper job one night. It was Saturday night, you know, sports editor, so they wait till early in the morning before they put the sports page to bed, you know, with all the late scores. And he got pulled over on 95, and he was dog-tired. He wasn't thinking. He saw the cop coming, right? And he says, all right, he's going to ask for my license and registration. Well, he didn't wait for the cop to say, can I see your license and registration, please? So as the cop pulls up, walks up next to him, he sticks his hand in the glove compartment, and he turns around, and the cop has this business end of his 9mm pointing 9. He goes, what the blank are you doing? And my friend says, well, don't you want my license and registration? He goes, yeah, after I ask you for it.
You know, Paul, it's interesting you say that because, you know, one day, you know, I had my hands on the steering wheel and the officer asked for it, and I stopped myself and I said, is it okay for me to get it?
Sure.
Because it was in the glove compartment. He said, yeah, go ahead. But, you know, I don't know. My mother always raised me to respect the police, you know, be polite. She always taught me that stuff. So, it stayed with me.
You know? Me too.
But to get belligerent with the cops, like, you know, what we read in the paper, it just never works. And then it gets to a point where I thought the officer was very reasonable. Mm-hmm. And then at one point said, well, I'm going to have to arrest you. And that's what happens. It escalates.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unnecessary. He should have just handed over his driver's license. And if he contested, you know, being pulled over for speeding, that's when you appeal it. But prior to that, you know, you should just go along with it and do the right thing. You know, we avoid a lot of controversy and just try to do the right thing, you know?
Yeah. Chris, other than that, what's on your mind as we wrap up another week here? What do you got?
Well, hey, this was a hell of a week, wasn't it?
Yeah, certainly, certainly.
With Biden not running. And I think I had mentioned a while back that I didn't feel he was going to run. I think I mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened that he didn't. And it's very interesting. I think the new Democratic candidate has really energized the Democratic base. And it's going to be interesting to watch. It really is. it's fascinating to see that over 28,000 young people in a 24-hour span registered to vote. And $100 million was raised in 24 hours, you know, for the campaign for, you know, Vice President Harris. So, you know, I know Trump was out there, you know, wanting to get rid of Biden, get rid of him. He did. And let's see where this goes from here, you know.
And now,
what was interesting, Paul, I read, as a matter of fact, there's a move to try and remove J.D. Vance from the ticket.
Oops. Yeah.
And replace him with Haley. And I don't know how much that's going to help. I really don't know. But I think it's going to be a very interesting race this year. I think it tightens things up and gives a different perspective, you know?
Absolutely. Chris, I guess now we have the awarding of that state money to the candidates in the 22nd district and the two-man race in the 23rd, although we all know that Ernie Newton's not eligible for that funding. So I guess, Chris, we're going to start to see maybe in the next week, obviously, because it's such a compressed time frame here, a lot of folks in Monroe and Trumbull and Bridgeport going to start seeing a lot of campaigning.
Well, you know, Paul, I've already gotten, I think, three mailers in my mailbox already from at least three of the candidates. And I think, you know, many candidates set things up ready to go with the anticipation that the public funding will be available. And I think that's what happened. So they had things in the queue ready to go. The public funding came in and then pays the printer and the mailer and so forth. So I think, you know, in earnest, the campaign has begun, and I know all the candidates are out there with signage and literature being put in the mailbox. So it's up and running, and it's going to be a very interesting race, I believe. You know, you have three Bridgeport candidates that are going to, frankly, split up the vote in Bridgeport, and you have the one candidate from Trumbull, who I think will solidify the votes in Trumbull and Monroe, and if she's able to pick up enough votes in Bridgeport, could win. You know, that's the fascinating thing. I think when there's more candidates in races like this, the vote is divided up, you know?
Yeah, and Chris, these races are always interesting because I find with the General Assembly, Chris, and doing a show like this, it gives me a unique perspective, and you probably know this too. When it comes to state legislators, you either have people who are really in tune. Oh, I know who my state rep is, and I email him or her all the time, or my state Senate person. Or on the other end, you have people who have no idea who they are. So, you know, I guess these races can be really challenging. It's somebody who's ready to swear at you because they know who you are, or somebody you knock on a door and they have no idea what the race is.
No, it's very true, Paul, and I think more today than ever before, there's less and less candidates going door to door. You know, when I was running, I went door to door. I used to walk my district sometimes three times.
Wow.
I go to each house at least three times because I thought it was always important to stay in touch with people. And that's where you find out what's going on and what the needs are for your constituents. But today, candidates hardly walk like they used to do, you know, the door to door personal contact. Mm-hmm. And they become somewhat more distant from the candidates. You know, when I was coming up politically, we used to do our own mailers. You know, you bring the mailer in, you get the labels, you get a group of people together, and you mail it out. Today, everything is done by a mail house. So you've taken the personal touch out of it. You know, just in my case, for example, I was there for 20 years, loved every minute of it, would do it all over again. I really loved serving in the legislature because I was able to help people with their quality of life issues. And, you know, people responded to me, and I was reelected a number of times. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the guy who replaced me, Paul, I was getting calls months after the election when I had stepped out. I was getting calls to work on constituent things because people had my number. You know, I often joke the guy that replaced me, I think they etched on his desk up there that so-and-so slept here for 10 years, you know, because, frankly, he was MIA. And I always feel, you know, if you're in their elected office, you've got to be present. You've got to be helping people. You've got to be doing things. And, you know, I can point to a number of pieces of legislation that I introduced and was able to get passed for Bridgeport and for the state. And I just think that's the way it should be. But more and more, I see people just running for office, going through the motions. You know, they run unopposed, usually in a primary or the election, and they just walk in. And I think that's the worst thing because there's no accountability from the people to the elected official. And I think that's when you know, corruption occurs. That's when lack of interest, lack of follow through for constituents. And I've always said that if you run against someone who doesn't stay engaged, you'll beat them, you know, beat him or her. And that was the argument with public financing. You know, some incumbents were all worried. I say, I have nothing to worry about. If you're working hard and doing what you're supposed to, people reward you. If you don't do it, then you're in trouble, and then an upstart could knock you out. And that's usually what happens, unfortunately. Yeah. But it's a way of holding people accountable.
Sure. Chris Caruso. Chris, thank you. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next time. Thanks, Chris.
Yep. Take care.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.